Hey there, it's Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli, and I want to chat with you about a key ingredient for a fabulous date night, feeling sexy. And come on, let's be real. What you wear plays a big part in how you rock that confidence. That's why I'm thrilled to introduce you to Quince. Quince brings you premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts starting at just $30, along with washable silk tops, 40-karat gold jewelry, and more. And guess what? All of their goodies are priced 50 to 80% lower than similar brands. By teaming up directly with top factories, Quince skipped the middleman and hands us the saving. Plus, they stick to factories with safe, ethical practices and top-notch fabrics and finishes. How awesome is that? Picking from Quince's website was tough, because they have a ton of fabulous choices. I ended up going for their 100% washable silk sleep dress in champagne. And let me tell you, my husband was floored. He's convinced whoever rocks this is in for a blast. I'm going to record some content on that dress so you can see how fabulous is that dress. Elevate your date night style with Quince. Pop over to quince.com/sexology for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sexology to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sexology.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli.
Hello there. You are listening to episode 381 of Sexology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli, and I'm thrilled to have you join us today. In today's episode, we have a special guest, Danielle Bezzalo, Master of Public Health, also known as DB. Danielle is a creator, executive producer, and host of the Sex Ed with DB podcast, a feminist podcast that provides comprehensive sex education centering LGBTQ+ and BIPOC experts. In this episode, we're delving into the topic of sex education, exploring the most common questions children, teens, and adults have about this crucial topic. Danielle teaches in different schools, high schools, and teaches sex ed to adults. So I thought she will be an excellent resource for us to answer some of our burning questions. Before we dive into the episode today, I wanted to give a shout out to Mira, our sponsor. Are you tired of the uncertainty and disappointment that comes with trying to conceive? Meet Mira, your personalized fertility tracker. With Mira, you can track your ovulation with 99% accuracy, giving you the confidence you need to plan for pregnancy. Imagine no longer having to guess when your fertility window is or feeling disappointed every time you get your period. Mira's advanced technology measures actual fertility hormone concentrations, providing you with personalized insights about your ovulation and fertility window. Whether you have irregular cycles or PCOS, Mira syncs your data automatically to the app, eliminating the need for manual charting and guesswork. Plus, with the power of AI, Mira learns about your cycle and gives you accurate insights every step of the way. Don't let uncertainty hold you back. Take control of your fertility journey with Mira. Order now online at miracare.com and use promo code Dr. Mo'oli for 17% of Mira monitors and fertility consultations. Say goodbye to disappointment and hello to precision with Mira. All right, without further ado, here's my conversation with Danielle Bezzalo. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Sexology Podcast. I am so excited to welcome another podcaster, sex educator, Danielle Bezzalo. Danielle, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
It's my pleasure to have you on the show. I know that you have extensive background in sex education and colleagues that they are in the education area or sex educators. They have like the best stories of the questions they get, the experiences they had. So let us know, how did you get in this field?
Absolutely. Yeah. So a little bit of background on kind of my qualifications. I have a master's of public health from Columbia, and I always knew that I wanted to go to grad school for something. I like knew that I was passionate about teaching. I'm a performer, I'm a singer, so I knew that I was passionate about entertaining and working with young people. And so that kind of combined with the fact that my mom is an OBGYN. And yeah, essentially, I had this really wild experience while teaching abroad. I was actually teaching in Israel when I was, you know, like 22 years old, right after graduating from college. And I essentially had this wild experience with an Orthodox rabbi there. And my teaching cohort was being shown around this really religious community of Jerusalem. And the super Orthodox rabbi there that was showing us around was kind of talking about, you know, their traditions and here's where we have synagogue and here's blah, blah, blah. And he kind of offhandedly mentioned that he had five daughters. And when each of them reached the age of 17 or 18, they would be married off by the matchmaker and they wouldn't learn about sex until their wedding night when they had it for the first time. And he kind of rattled off like all of these things at once. And I was quite disturbed and upset about that. And I was one of the only people in the room of like 40 people who raised my hand and kind of challenged this person publicly and said like, well, what about what they want? Like, what about if they're not ready to be moms or they never want to be moms, or what about their consent? Like, I think I said a bunch of stuff and he kind of waved me off and was like, this is how it goes here. And so that experience really inspired me. That night, I started looking up public health programs and learning that that was going to be my next step for how I was going to gain some content knowledge. And yeah, kind of fast forward to Trump being elected in 2016, really got the ball rolling for me to do something about all this kind of injustice that I felt like specifically young women and girls around the world and in our local communities face. And so that's when I decided to take a podcasting class and then started Sex Ed with DB about 7 years ago.
Well, what an important field to work on and how challenging, I can imagine, to kind of like hear people's kind of misinformation, especially I think with younger population, you can shape their ideas, you can engage them. But I feel like when you are older, including myself, when we're older, it's you are set in your ways, right? It's harder to change your perspective. So it is fascinating to kind of have this conversation with people when they haven't had proper sex education or what they experience is some kind of a intergenerational issue. And I'm not talking about what you're talking about. I'm talking about my own culture as well. That I have two shows, like one is this and another one in Farsi. That's my first language. And that's why I decided to do it. I was like, okay, there's just so many misinformation. And one of the topics that I talked about was a female genital mutilation. And apparently I had this kind of, I couldn't believe that there are some parts of Iran that they're practicing this. And it was wild to me to hear that some women, they were advocating, who experienced that. They were survivors of this or advocating for that as part of a tradition. So I feel like sometimes like we have this internalized belief, and I love that you have a podcast on that because it helps people to kind of like listen to these things, the safety of their home, and kind of explore some of these views. So you work at school, and also I can imagine you're like part of your population that you work with are adults. Tell us more about what does that entail?
Yeah. So occasionally I do go into middle and high schools and teach age appropriate, comprehensive, medically accurate sex education. And it can look really different depending on who exactly I am teaching to. And so if I'm going into a middle school, then the content that I'm covering may be more around puberty or, you know, consent or around friendships or, you know, things of that nature that kids, students in middle school might be dealing with. Whereas if I'm going into high school, say like a 10th or 11th grade class, We're talking about sexual acts. We're talking about STI testing. You know, we're talking about, okay, how do I know if this person is into me? Like communication skills. And so, yeah, it's really a fascinating, exciting thing to be able to interact with young people. And they're so smart and they know so much. They grew up with the internet. And so anything theoretically is accessible to them in the tips of their hands. And so I think that, you know, that experience is really different from my podcast where I'm getting out, you know, medically accurate information to people who are 18 plus. And we're talking about sex toys and masturbation and pleasure. And, you know, masturbation and pleasure for sure are also information. That's information that young people also deserve. That's like the right to their body and the right to pleasure without feeling shame about that. And so, yeah, I think like generally speaking, it's a real privilege to be able to get questions from people and really try to understand, okay, how can I create my curriculum and answer these questions in a way where I'm meeting these folks where they're at?
One of the realizations that I had that blew my mind was it seems like there are only few states that they require medically accurate sex education. Like in some other places, you can say whatever you want. Like, please enlighten us. How does that work?
So yeah, only you're right on the money. Unfortunately, only 18 U.S. states require program content of sex education to be quote unquote medically accurate. So yes, theoretically, in these 32 other states, who knows what the teachers are teaching, what kinds of lies or misinformation, or maybe they're misinformed, maybe they're coming from it from a place of shame. And maybe it's not intentional, right? Like the fact that this isn't for sure confirmed in all 50 states is a huge problem. And I think that that is a piece of legislation that should be fixed and be changed as soon as possible.
Because I don't think that benefits anyone, right? That at least with medically accurate information, you know, there is some gold standards of what people are sharing. But I think like, even if I had differing views than mainstream, I still wouldn't want someone else to push their values and kind of like beliefs to my children. And it can be very damaging as a bit like you see a lot with people in the community. I see it in my practice that many people have this internalized shame about sex, about things that are very, very normal, about like masturbation, fantasies, those things, and really impact their quality of sexual experiences. So I'm kind of curious, what are some of the common questions you get from like younger kids, older kids when it comes to sex education?
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually have up my anonymous question box from when I last year taught middle school. And I also have the high school question box. So we can kind of go through a couple of them. You know, I think for middle schoolers, like they just kind of are interested in the basics of like, how does this work? Whether that's birth control or, you know, when are people having sex? What is my anatomy? What should it look like? Tell me about the development of breasts. You know, like they're just interested in like what is happening and when it's going to happen. In middle school, also, they are curious about drugs and alcohol. So that kind of leads into conversations around, okay, like when I'm teaching about drugs and alcohol, I teach a harm reduction model of saying, hey, will you probably try these things at some point in your life? Yes, you might. And like, does that mean that you should go and try them right now? No. Are your brains still developing? Yes, right? Like really giving them the facts about like what can happen when you take drugs and alcohol. And also saying, okay, how do you think that influences the way in which you communicate with other people? Like really letting students know like the effects of that. And at the same time, we know that abstinence-only education and programs like DARE do not work. So saying flat out over and over again, do not do this, is unhelpful and doesn't give students the information that they need to make decisions that are best for them. A couple other questions or kind of like groups of questions that younger students ask are around the bucket of birth control and STIs. Like I kind of said in the beginning of this, like how does the birth control patch work? How does the NuvaRing work? How does, you know, the pill work? How do I ask my parents for birth control? How do I get tested for STIs? How do I get tested for STIs without my parents knowing, right? Like a lot of students don't really have the type of relationship with their parent that they wish that they did. And first and foremost, we tell students, hey, if it's safe for you, we really recommend that you talk to your parent or guardian or a loved one about this before you do this on your own, because that can, you know, that the research show that essentially parents who have good relationships with their students, they're more likely to ask that parent for help and get the thing that they need, whether that's birth control or STI testing or otherwise. And so I would say those are kind of the buckets of middle school questions. And then when it comes to high school, we're getting a little bit more advanced, like I said in the beginning, right? Like they're asking questions about lube. They're asking questions about pleasure and about the vulva, how people with vulvas feel pleasure. What does an orgasm look like? Why are some clitorises smaller than others or seemingly smaller than others? Why do some people orgasm with penetration and others don't? So they're very curious about like the act of sex and what exactly is going on. They're also curious about things like abortion, like what do abortion pills look like versus an in-clinic abortion? You know, how old do you have to be to have an abortion? Things of that nature. Same kinds of questions around birth control and how the IUD works. People are also asking really, really fantastic questions around breaking boundaries and what do you do if you break a boundary, right? So like sexual communication and things of that nature. So yeah, I think generally speaking, the theme across all students is some version of, am I normal and am I doing this right? And they want to know that through these more specific questions that I named.
Well, first of all, I love how generations evolve with information.
Right.
It seems like they get the basic information, hopefully from internet, accurate information. And now they have more of kind of like advanced questions in a way. It's funny that my sister, like she's like herself very reserved when it comes to sex. And she keeps saying that, please, please talk to my daughter about sex. And
she needs you.
Yeah, she's like, oh, please. Like her dad is asking, like, we don't want to do it wrong. And I brought this vulva puppet that we all like educators, sex therapists.
Right.
We have. And I started like, and I was so excited talking to her about different parts. And she was like so cool about it. And she knew most of it. I was like, oh
great.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I didn't know any of these things until I was in college. But thankfully, people get more information. Specifically, I can imagine at the places that are more progressive. And some of the things that you brought up, it was so interesting. And I haven't thought about it as much because I don't work with younger children. So what would you say to children if they want to kind of ask about birth control or any kind of contraceptive from their parents, because it goes against the teaching of you're not going to have sex. So it's going to be very challenging.
Totally. I mean, you know, this is a very nuanced conversation. Like we said in the beginning of this podcast, like it really depends on what your culture is, what your relationship to your parents and what if they're religious or not. Like there are so many different factors that we need to really consider. And again, for some students, like this is not a realistic conversation that you can have with your parent, and you're not alone. Like you definitely, you know, deserve the right to have this information, and it's possible that it won't come from your parent. But if your parent is potentially open to hearing you talk about birth control, I think there's a good template of a conversation that I can offer right now, which is and it's okay also to name your emotion. So if the student wants to go to their parent and say, hey, I want to talk to you about something, but I'm a little nervous about it, you know, to really name that out loud can feel very powerful, and to really communicate how we're feeling can kind of set the scene so that your parent knows like, oh, this is something that they want me to take seriously. So I better like be paying attention and take this seriously. And if you're not nervous about it, that's great. But if you are, again, totally okay to name that. And maybe it is a good thing for this template for you to start off with a question of like, can you tell me what you know about birth control? And if your parent wants to take that as an opportunity to say, oh, this is what I know, maybe they can give you that information. Or parents, if you're listening, it is perfectly okay for you to say, I love that you asked that question. I'm going to do some more research and I'm going to come back to you. So it's definitely a two-way street of not each person has to know every single thing when they're going into the conversation. They can put a pause in on it and say, I'm going to go figure this out and then we'll come back together. And so I think if the student just kind of opens with that question and says, tell me what you know about birth control, say the parent has some information, the student can then reply, you know, I've been considering that maybe birth control would be a good option for me. And, you know, it's your choice whether or not we want to say, here's why. If it's too personal for you and you're not interested in sharing that with your parent, that's okay. But I think that you sharing, okay, this is of interest to me, would you be open to making an appointment with me and going with me if that's something that you want as the student? And so I think like this is, again, really dependent on how your parent or guardian respond to you. Something that I do make clear to my students, depending on kind of the state that they're in. And this is a really helpful tool if you just kind of go to Planned Parenthood and really like engage with their chatbot and say, like, I'm in this state. Can you give me information on like my right to birth control? Basically, they can help you with, you know, learning, oh, like actually you do need a parent in order to get birth control, or, oh, you can actually do this on your own, but you should be wary if you get mail or if your bill goes directly to your parents' insurance and you're afraid that they're going to find out, this is maybe what you should do instead. So I think like it is very nuanced. It is very important for students to know that they have the right to birth control. And the last thing I'll say is that if you're someone who has a penis or you're having sex with someone with a penis, condoms are a really fantastic way to engage in birth control and engage in using birth control. And you can get those for free at certain clinics and Planned Parenthoods. And they are highly effective when used correctly. So I think like things like condoms, which you don't need a prescription for, there aren't as many barriers, and no pun intended, to get condoms. That can be a really great way for people to use birth control on their own terms.
One thing that really motivated me to become sexual health advocate is like I went to high school in Iran. I had this friend, I think it was like maybe in sophomore year. She was in this consensual relationship with a guy that she really liked. And one day when I came to school, like I heard she committed suicide. And apparently she was 5 months pregnant and she was coming from a religious family. She just didn't know what to do. And we went to her funeral, and what a tragedy it was for her family, for a boyfriend, and even 30 something years later, right? I'm thinking about that. And that was like a true tragedy and trauma and all around. And I think many, many people, they just don't know what are their options, who to turn to. So even identifying resources can be really helpful. And I think like the work that you're doing is really meaningful of helping people to find resources and kind of like knowing what are their rights, because it can be very scary to be in that state, like the level of hopelessness, helplessness. I know, again, in Iran, it's illegal, right? Like to kind of have child kind of like when you're not married. But again, it was like such a horrible outcome. So one of the things I hear from parents a lot, so many of our listeners, they have their own children. And since it's a sex show, like all of our listeners hopefully are 18 and above, I hear that they feel conflicted. Maybe they don't prefer their kid having sex when they are like maybe under 18. But they think about like, okay, HPV vaccine is recommended if you're 12 and up. How should I approach this? When I'm doing this thing, am I motivating my kid or giving them permission? Or if I give them kind of like information about contraceptive or condom, is that going to impact them? Kind of like thinking, I'm giving them permission. So I'm sure you're hearing that all the time. So what is your response to that?
Yeah, no, you're right. This is a very common, I would say, misbelief, which is, you know, again, like parents, you're not alone in thinking this. And I imagine when I become a parent, I, you know, even as a sex educator, I will have my own flaws. And just like, it's tough to be a parent and you want the best for your kid. And so the reason why I say this is a misbelief is because there is research out there that shows that you preparing your student or your kid for sex will not make them go out and have more sex. In fact, when we educate students at the appropriate time. So, you know, there is age appropriate health education from K through 12, and sex education really does start in middle school. And, you know, with talking about, you know, being safe and touching and consent and all of those things, kissing, whatever we're talking about, right? There could be sexual components to that. And when we teach age appropriate, medically accurate health and sex education to young people, it actually delays their sexual debut because they are aware of, okay, here are the risks, here are the rewards, here's how to be safe, here's how to know when I'm ready to have sex for the first time and when I'm not. And by preparing them, we actually allow them to make that choice that's right for themselves, maybe later than they would have if they did not have that information. So I think the earlier that you can start those conversations with your kid, and it really starts with body parts, like naming their body parts and saying, hey, this is your penis, this is your vulva, like really understanding that those are not dirty words. Those are just names of anatomy parts. And for kids to understand that, there is also research that shows that when kids are able to understand their body and know their boundaries, they're less likely to be victims of sexual assault. And so this is, you know, again, grounded in research and really does show that kids really do deserve this age appropriate information. And parents, if you don't feel prepared to do that, you have resources. You have this podcast. I have a podcast that I'll talk about at the end. There are a ton of books out there. Again, Planned Parenthood is a free, incredible online resource that has a ton of videos and articles and A to Z. You know, it would take one afternoon of internet kind of rabbit hole research for you to really just learn stuff. And it doesn't have to stop there. Like as your student grows, you're also learning and things are changing and new terms are coming up. And it's an ever kind of evolving process.
I agree with you. And I think the research is very clear that like you're just empowering your kid and your teenager to have better experiences when they're ready to have experiences. Speaking of the books, one of the books that I recommend people like offer my niece is like Girls and Sex. And I love that in the book to talk about orgasm gap, right? Like helping girls to know about like your pleasure matters. Mm-hmm. Because I think the narrative that at least I hear from people, like from the girls, is that they feel it's more about boy and doing things for them. And it's really important to talk about pleasure as part of sexual education, that your pleasure matters and it is part of it. And kind of like modeling consent at home with kind of like respecting their values, respecting their boundaries. And one of the tricky things I hear from parents, so part of my practice is treatments of eating disorder. So I get teens, a lot of teen girls, and mm-hmm. also I have mothers that are coming for sex therapy. Many people ask about sex toys. Teenage girls say, like, you know, how should I kind of approach it when my family find my sex toy, or if they order it, it's coming home. And the parents want to know, should I buy it? Should I encourage it, discourage it? What is it? What should we do around that? Which is like a tricky question. Like, again, that wasn't a question when I was growing up.
No.
So I guess, like, right now, it's a thing.
You're totally right. And I actually haven't really heard this question before, honestly, because I haven't necessarily engaged with enough sex positive parents where they're asking me like what they should do about sex toys for their teens. And so I think what I would recommend to parents is to really first and foremost talk about safety when it comes to masturbation and pleasure with your teen. Don't use certain objects or, you know, and I know that this can be like an embarrassing conversation for you and the teen. And again, can be a great moment for you to say, I know that you're going to hate this and maybe this is going to be embarrassing, but it's totally okay that we're talking about this. Pleasure is a totally normal part of life and we're going to get through it together. So I think like if you notice your kid masturbating or you've walked in on them before, have seen them masturbating with an object that is actually unsafe for them to be masturbating with, that's kind of the first thing that you want to talk about is like, hey, it's really important that you put things on or near your body that won't hurt you. And so I understand you're just trying to get to feel good, but it's important that you don't use this thing or whatever that is. Another thing that you can mention to your teen is like, using your hands and using, you know, just whatever you have on your body is a perfectly normal and totally great way to masturbate and engage in pleasure. And I do think once that person, that student turns 18, maybe that's a good time for you to, you know, send them a couple websites, or for you parents to kind of look into what kinds of sex toys are body safe and have good materials, and you can kind of offer that to them. It is very possible that your teen won't want to talk about that with you, and that is okay too. They deserve, again, their own kind of journey, their own research. But the most important thing is that if they come to you with questions, you are either prepared to answer them, or again, say, I'm going to put a pin in that. I'm going to do some research and I'll come back to you.
Well, I like that kind of like modeling openness, naming the emotions, and kind of like legalizing. I'm going to look into that, right?
Right.
I don't think I can talk about my experience as a psychologist, sex therapist. There are things that I need to look into that.
Right.
And we don't have all the information all the time. So there's nothing wrong with that. And I feel like kids can figure out if you're feeling shameful or there's something that like you are also struggling with it. So I feel like sex education starts with people getting more comfortable around their sexuality and their relationship with pleasure. That's something that kids can pick up. So I love that one of the questions you said high schoolers ask are about lubricants. I know that back then when I was growing up a million years ago, many people were thinking saliva is a way to go, which is not a good lubricant at all. But
no.
I love that people are thinking about lubricants. So that's a conversation they're asking you. What kind of question they ask, like the brands of lubricant, or what do they usually think about?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, when I was going through sex education as a high schooler, we were definitely not asking these kinds of questions. But students, you know, especially with like how easy it is to access pornography, right? Like students are viewing it. Like the average age for boys to access pornography, I believe, is like at the time they first see it, I think it's like 11, right? Like it's quite young. And I think for girls, it's like 14. So like, yes, you can be as super parent as you want when it comes to you putting safeguards on your kids' internet access. But what about their friend? Or what about, you know, when they go over to someone else's house? Like, we need to be aware that if we don't talk to our kids about sex, then porn will do the teaching for us. And we need to teach them the difference between porn and real life sex. And so with that being said, some of the kinds of questions that students have asked me about lube are, what kinds of lube are there? When can you use lube? Forever, whenever, all the time is usually kind of my answer when it comes to sex. And like, what are important things that I should know when it comes to lube? So I'll kind of give them answers around, okay, they're oil-based, water-based, silicone-based, hybrids. You can use lube whenever you want to make sexual acts more pleasurable, decreases friction, increases wetness, and increases pleasure. And I kind of give them the no-nos around lube. So for example, don't use oil-based lube with condoms because the condom can break. Don't use a silicone-based lube with a silicone-based sex toy because it can tear down the toy's material, causing bacteria to get into it, which could lead to infection. You know, also people have aversions or allergic reactions to certain kinds of lube. So it's really important that they look at the ingredients and figure out, oh, if this has aloe in it and that's going to make me sting, like I shouldn't use something like that. I also, you know, Uberlube is one of my amazing sponsors, and they're gynecologically recommended by leading doctors in the US, and that's for good reason. Like, they make really fantastic lube that is body safe, that's really smooth, that you don't need a ton of it. You don't need to keep reapplying. It's a really great silicone-based lube. So I'll kind of say that to students, like, this is something that I recommend to you. Like, many people are just looking for an actual recommendation of something to try. And I'm definitely not afraid to be like, yeah, I trust this brand. I'm happy to share that with you. And, you know, here, you know, that you can go to a sex toy store too and like buy a sample of a lube to see if you like it before, you know, spending $20, $30 on something if you don't have that money. And you can just see how your body feels.
And it's a question I feel like people of all ages are asking. I had this kind of like presentation for psychologists right before this for aging, sex and aging. And that was one of the questions that people say, oh, what kind of lube do you recommend? So I feel like it's really important for people of all ages have a safe place to ask these questions and be able to get accurate information. And I am so passionate about this topic. I could talk about you with you for hours. Mm-hmm. So be mindful of time. What about adults? Like for your show, what are the sex education information that people are curious about most of? And what are some of the common misunderstanding?
Yeah, this is a great question because it usually falls under two buckets. One is some version of, am I pregnant? And the second is, am I masturbating too much? Or something around how unhealthy or healthy is my masturbation use? And with the first one, you know, it really is tough because I can feel the panic that's coming through the DM on Instagram or wherever they're DMing me around, am I pregnant? And I have to tell them, like, I can't tell you that. Like, I can't give you that information. Like, usually someone will say, the condom broke, or his penis was near me, or, you know, he touched his penis and then he touched my vagina, but we didn't have sex. Like, there's just so much panic and misinformation about how people get pregnant, how people can know that they're pregnant, and how long that takes to actually figure out. And so what I'll often tell to people is I'll kind of send them, you know, we have like a really detailed Instagram graphic that goes over, okay, how do people get pregnant? How many days does it take for a sperm to fertilize an egg? How many days can a sperm live inside of the vagina? Like all of these questions. And ultimately, I'll kind of share with them, like, you won't know the answer to this until, you know, your period is late, essentially. And also, you basically have to, if you're worried about this, consider your options for, you know, what you would like to do. If that involves plan B, if that involves a prescriptive pill called Ella, that's a little bit more effective. If you want to get an IUD inserted, which is the most effective form of emergency contraception, like there are so many options for people. But what I unfortunately have to tell them is like a stranger on the internet cannot give you the answer that you're really looking for. Like, this is all I have for you. And then for the second bucket of, am I masturbating too much? I usually will say to somebody, okay, like, here are a couple of questions that I might have for you, right? Like, is your masturbation taking place of your responsibilities like work or school, you or childcare? Usually people are like, no, it's not. I'm like, okay, second question, are you like physically harming yourself? Do you feel like pain, or are you are you actually like harming yourself? And usually the answer is like, no, I'm not harming myself. Okay, great. Number three, are you making anyone else around you uncomfortable or harming anyone else by your masturbation? Are you doing this in a public place that's non-consensual? Are you doing it with the door open at your house? Like, what is going on there? And they're usually like, no, I'm not harming anyone else. And typically, if the answer is no, 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 I'm kind of like, go to town. Like, we have been taught a lot of things around masturbation, that it's shameful, that it should feel stigmatizing, it should feel awful. And the reality is like, masturbation and pleasure are a very normal and healthy part of our daily existence in this world. And if we can really feel comfortable with that and unlearn some of the myths and the shame around masturbation, then we can start to feel like, oh, this is actually just as important maybe as me exercising, or just as important as me eating healthy. Like, we don't treat sexual health the same way publicly, even though most people are having sex and most people are masturbating. And so it's really important for me to respond to those people and say, like, here are a couple articles that I recommend that you read or check out. But yeah, I really love responding, like, go to town to people. If, you know, for most people, masturbation is not an issue, and it's just something we need to unlearn the myths around.
And what is interesting is how across cultures, right, that this is the concern that people have. And I have a Farsi-specific Instagram account that I talk about very basic, like a quote-unquote basic sex education. And I have this friend that she's in Europe, and she's Iranian as well. And we always get during live this question of, are you sure masturbation is not harmful? Someone said, like, are you sure that it doesn't cause blindness? And she's very straightforward. She's like, is your father blind? Is your family member blind?
Yeah.
How many people do you know that, like, all of a sudden they got blind?
Right. No, that's so true. It's like, let's ground this in some sort of reality here.
Right. And she's like very direct. And people oftentimes, they learn this negative messaging when it's not rooted in reality. And part of it is values, right? Like maybe you don't want to masturbate for any number of reasons, but I think it's really important to have the accurate information, right? It's not causing harm to your body. It's not killing your soul.
Right.
It actually can improve your mental health, mental wellness. So, but again, if people can decide what's under sexual health plan. With adults, I also get a lot of questions about pregnancy. And, you know, I thought I know a lot when I'm looking at my DMs, but some of the things when I answer, and people will kind of insist, I sometimes question my stand. Like I got like a few days ago about like, can I get pregnant from anal sex? I was like, I'm pretty sure that cannot get pregnant from anal sex. And someone else, when I was posted, was like, oh, but I know someone that they got pregnant from anal sex.
It's like, well, maybe that's what they told you, but I don't think so.
Like, it's like crazy that, like, you know, how we buy into these ideas and like how sometimes we have this conviction when it's not accurate. I personally, I was a designated sex educator at my school because my mom had, so I was born right after Islamic Revolution. So I had two books. One was about anatomy and one was about pleasure. And I was an expert in my body. So I was a designated sex educator at school. But this is so embarrassing, but I'm putting it out there because, you know, it's just like when people doesn't teach us, you don't know much about sex. First time I had sexual encounter was in college. And I didn't know penises can get erect.
Wow.
I've seen it in like, you know, I had dolls that have penises. I've seen soft porn, but I never seen an erect penis. And I think it tells us like, you know, unless someone's talking to you about it, you might not have all the necessary information.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, there's so much that we don't teach people and that when you're entering college, right, especially in the U.S., that is kind of a time where a lot of people are exploring and a lot of people don't have the ability to advocate for themselves and what they want because we're not teaching them how to do it. And so the more that we teach about anatomy and the more that we talk about communication earlier on, again, like the more likely kids and adults will be prepared to do what they want to do.
Well, as I said, like your wealth of great information, I can talk to you about all of these things hours and hours and embarrass myself about everything I didn't know. But I want people to check out your show. I know you have lots of great resources. So if people want to hear more about your content, the work that you do, what are some of the places that they can go to?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks again for having me on. This has been such a wonderful conversation. But yeah, my podcast is Sex Ed with DB. And so you can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. We have 200 episodes of content. We have really, really great stuff, amazing guests. Our next season is coming out on April 24th, and our first episode is going to be with Dr. Emily Nagoski. So definitely recommend to listen to that episode. And you can find us on TikTok at Sex Ed with DB and on Instagram at Sex Ed with DB Podcast. And yeah, if you're interested in writing into us or partnering with us or just saying hello, we're at sexedwithdb@gmail.com.
Well, thank you so much for everything you do. And your work is, as you know, is very important. And I hope people check out your show. And thank you so much for your time. This was definitely a wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, folks, that's a wrap for today's episode. We've covered a lot today, especially about how important it is to have good sex education. It's not just about the basics. It's about really understanding ourselves and our relationships. Without that knowledge, it's easy to get caught up in all the wrong messages out there. And hey, before we sign off, I got a little reminder for you. If you're looking to get a handle on your fertility, check out Mira. It's this awesome compact hormone lab that gives you super accurate hormone readings. Plus, with their free app, you can track your cycles and figure out your fertile window. It's like having a fertility expert right in your pocket without going to a fertility clinic, having all of those uncomfortable conversations and possibly disappointment. Don't forget, you can use the promo code Dr. Moali to get 17% of Mira monitors and fertility consultations. Take control of your fertility journey with Mira. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, your sexual health is a big part of your overall well-being. Take care of it and take care of yourself. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.